Okay, so Bob, we are recording this intro after recording this whole episode.
Yeah.
Because we decided that this is just going to be for patrons of the podcast, because maybe it gets a little personal.
Yeah.
And also, there's no breaks, so that sort of lends itself to being a patron episode.
Fine by me.
So if you want to hear this episode with Bob, in which we talk about a lot of in-depth things, the title of this episode is going to be Fast Questions for Bob, but we literally only get to one question.
And we can't say it was fast.
No. So become a patron if you want to hear this episode, and if not, then take care of yourself, because
you still deserve it.
So Bob, let's stop talking about old man house renovation stuff, and let's answer some fast questions from the patrons. What do you say?
I love being a nerd.
Patron Jocelyn G. For all y'all, we call Bobby G.
Yeah.
Because Bob Gettle. And so Jocelyn G is a frequent emailer in with really great, great questions.
Jossie G.
Dear Bob, she says, thank you for the honesty and gentleness you bring to the podcast. I'm always happy when I see a Bob episode come out. Oh. By the way, I often feel neglected, abandoned, rejected, and fragile. I fluctuate between super clingy and avoidant in my relationships. When I hear myself describe my perceptions in therapy, I understand how distorted they sound, almost like I can't believe these are my feelings because I rationally know better. So just chiming in, do you know what she means by that?
Sure, yeah.
Can you relate to that at all?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because you are smart, you're a therapist, you can look at yourself from the outside, and you at the same time are in the thick of the triggering and the emotion. So it doesn't necessarily end the pain or...
No, man, if smarts were enough to do it, then I wouldn't have my distortions.
Right.
But they're not, so, you know, whatever.
So Jossie G question is, how can I improve my outlook on my obvious distortions? I think outlook meaning, like, how do I forgive myself or something, or?
Yeah, we'll take a run at it.
Well, another question. Yeah. Does the shame over one's distorted thinking lessen over time? So I think it is. I think that's what she's saying.
Got it.
It's like, I'm judging myself for how distorted I can be in therapy.
Right.
And I've been trying to change it, but it's not going away.
Right.
And I hear you, Bob, talking about how you have distortions.
Yeah.
And you're not beating yourself up at night about them, seemingly, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
as far as you know.
How do I deal with this? So what's your answer to that?
Well, I don't like what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it.
Ooh.
It's not really much different. Hmm. Yesterday, I was thinking about something I did years ago. And I could just feel this wince and this wave of shame come over me, like I had done something. Now, the thing that I did was I was conspicuous in consumption. So, like, I wanted something and I spoke up about it. Mm. And conspicuous consumption is, like, one of my hot topics. Like, I hate being seen or even recognizing that I have a need. It just drives me into shame.
Well, I don't know if this is the poignant trauma that you've mentioned on the podcast before, but I think about that story you told me about, I don't know, you're 10 years old and your mom made you a sandwich or something.
Oh,
you're sitting
yeah.
in the kitchen and
yeah.
and she was pressuring you to tell her something, like a girl at school or
she
something.
She had a birthday, Jennifer Lush.
And
Amy Weibel.
And your mom was wanting to know, like,
whose birthday yeah, she wanted to know whose birthday,
and you were saying what?
I was in first or second grade and I didn't want to tell her whose birthday it was.
Yeah,
third grade. And
and instead of a normal or a nice mom just saying, okay, well, there must be some kind of insecurity there, let's talk about something else, you know. Let's not just lose our shit, which she did, and she started yelling at you and shaming you.
Yeah,
and you're eating mother's milk, if you will, because she made you a sandwich.
Yeah,
and symbolically in your mouth, you can't swallow the food.
Can't.
Because it's tainted.
I don't deserve it.
And I don't deserve it. You know, I don't deserve to have a sandwich after school.
Yeah.
And so that conspicuous consumption is a part of that.
Yeah, and it's like that with stuff now. So, like, my stock answer, I've watched myself do this for years. My stock answer, Colleen's like, do you want me to fill in the blank, fix you a plate of food, or bring you a cup of coffee or whatever, something? And I always say, no, no, thank you. And at some point, it's really annoying to her. And I don't blame her for being, like, one time, did I tell you the remote control story?
The wish?
We're in bed, right? And the remote control's on her nightstand, and I wanted it to turn the TV on. So I get up and I walk around the bed and I get there and I pick it up and I turn around and I get halfway back and I turn around, I look at her and she's looking at me and I turn around and put it back down next to her, walk around the bed, get back on my side and say to her, can you please hand me the remote? I hate asking for things. Mm-hmm. I hate it. It just feels like completely naked, like open to being ridiculed. Mm. So when I was
Yeah, it's different than rejection. It's, if I'm noticeable, then I'll get attacked.
Yeah, what do they say? The nail that sticks up is the one that gets the hammer.
So if I don't ask, I won't be noticed. Yeah.
So when I was 10, I was in the grocery store with my dad. Did I tell you this story? And he says, Bobby, go down the cookie aisle and pick out whatever you want. And so I go down the aisle.
The what aisle?
The cookie aisle.
Cookie aisle.
And I look at all the cookies there, and I'm sort of looking at them and ruling each one out because my sister doesn't like this kind and my brother doesn't like that kind, and standing there and the kind I like, they don't like. So I come back.
Do you remember what kind they were?
Yeah, they were generic, no frills brand oatmeal raisin cookies, which are fantastic and also unavailable because that supermarket closed.
I understand your siblings on this one.
Oh no, they're so good. Oh, so good. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whenever I would get oatmeal raisin, I'd be like, chocolate chip, oh, raisin, oh, oatmeal, oh.
Well, these things
but were God called, bless you that you like it. It's healthier.
They were called oatmeal raisin, but any raisins in there was just a nod to the occasional speck of raisin. Mostly they're just vanilla and cinnamon cookies that, you know, are presumably have some oatmeal in them or whatever, but they're, oh, fantastic.
But either way,
cooling of the realm.
Even at that age of, how old do you think you were?
I was 10.
That you would already be unable or terrified of even raising the question as to what do I want?
Yeah. Well, I didn't pick any and I came back to him and he said to me, where's your cookies? And I said, I couldn't find one that everybody would like. And he said, any other kid would go hog wild for a chance like that. And then he walked away from me.
Like, was he upset or was
he was disdainful.
He was disdainful.
Yeah, it's
you.
Not like he was saying, okay.
How did I fuck this up as a parent? That's what he should have been saying.
One would, yeah.
I mean, if I had a kid that said that to me, I would be like, holy shit, what did I do wrong?
And let's go get some fucking cookies. Like, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
I'll take care of the other kids. You just pick out what you want.
Yeah.
It'll be all right.
Not like, you piece of shit kid.
Yeah, no. So as a man now,
God damn, 50, that's awful. That's
56. Awful. Yeah, thanks. I guess thanks. I still can't do it very well.
Yeah.
And so I want to tell Jocelyn that it gets better.
Yeah.
And maybe for her it will, but for me it hasn't. So I still live in my marriage isolated, even though Colleen and me are home together all the time. I notice that if she's been out in another room and she comes in, that's when I get up and leave. Like, why? Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, proximity, she's just around. And I'm not happy about it. And it's not like I'm thinking run away from Colleen. It's more like I just look for ways to be alone. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of
safer.
Yeah. 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 Because it's not like Colleen's, she's not mean to me.
No.
No. But I just do. And
if you're by yourself in the garage, do you have an easier time picking the cookies that you want?
I can pretty much just do what I want in the, well, I can do more of what I want in the garage.
You're not frozen. I don't get the impression in the garage when you're deciding on how you're going to fix it up or get a new tool that you're frozen in the cookie aisle.
No, not frozen, but what I do is I do a tremendous amount of analysis and research if I want something. And
but you'd pull a trigger.
I can pull the trigger eventually, yeah.
Yeah. Usually whereas if you're in a room with Colleen, it might muddy the waters.
Yeah, like it's really hard for me to let her do stuff for me.
Or even to do anything for yourself?
Or to, yeah, well, I tend to be kind of, yeah, internal. So anything I do for myself, nobody can see. So, like I want to...
If she were to say, hey, pick out your favorite cookie from the drawer or the cabinet and get me one too, could you be able to, could you do that?
Yeah, I could do that.
Okay.
But if she were to say, tell me where you want to go to dinner tonight, or tell me if you want to make love or something, I'll balk and I'll freeze.
What will it look like to her?
She'll see my eyes go cast downward and I will freeze. Or I'll say, I don't know.
As if she's about to hit you or something?
Yeah, well, not physically, no. Not that she would do that. I don't have that. But more like I could get shamed because I've now been seen. It's like that nail that sticks up is the one that gets the hammer. So I really just try to be inconspicuous.
Yeah, you were damned if you did, damned if you didn't when you were a kid, right? I mean, that's what I'm hearing. You were damned if you chose the cookie and you were damned if you didn't.
Yeah.
So you're fucked and you might as well just cast your eyes down.
Yeah. So I'll say this to Jocelyn. I do not regret being alive. I don't wish to be. I don't want to be dead. I don't want to not exist. And I'm glad for the things that being alive have afforded me. But I'm not like you. I wish I was.
Like Jocelyn?
No, like you.
Like me?
Yeah.
How like me?
Well, you apologize for nothing. And you feel okay about existing in the ways in which you want to exist. I mean, I watch you assert yourself. We were just talking about this stuff. Some nerdy power consumption stuff. Like houses before our meeting and before we started this. And you're marvelously unselfconscious, which is one of the things that drew me to you when I first met you. Mm-hmm. You and another good friend of mine, both of you is very similar in that regard. And I apologize for everything or I don't seek it. Mm-hmm. So I don't regret. I don't wish I wasn't alive or existent. And I'm glad for whatever opportunity I have in this life to extract some measure of satisfaction. And I'll probably fall short of what's optimal. But there's still something good about being alive and something good about whatever it is that I can use my time for. So I can't say to Jocelyn that it gets much easier. I have no idea if it gets easier for Jocelyn. It doesn't get much easier for me, except in some ways I'm better off than I was 10 years ago. And in some ways, I'm better off than I was 20 years ago. And, but I still struggle with taking up space. So.
But you did stop at the foot of the bed.
Yeah, turned around. And it was still like I have now made myself really obvious. But one time she's in the kitchen and I says to her, hey, I know you'll divorce me if I ask, but can you bring me a Coke? And it's sort of funny, you know, right? You know, but inside I'm actually thinking I'm being a burden.
But you say it and yeah. You joke about it. You have the feeling, but
right.
You're pushing against it.
And I think in terms of Colleen's frustrations with me, that's probably the biggest one is I don't have a voice. I don't exercise a voice very much with her.
It's a denial to your partner when don't let them give to us.
Yeah. When you don't let them in on the inside and you don't let them give because... You
treat them like they're this random stranger on the street.
Right. With the presumption that that anything that she might give wouldn't be like fun for her. Like it's good to give to somebody. It's good to...
Yeah. And there's a passive accusation that Colleen is a dangerous human being.
Yeah, I'm sure she doesn't love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How could... that's no fun.
Yeah. You like to give to her?
I do. Yeah. Probably to a fault.
And mutual neediness is a part of bonding.
Yeah.
But you did stop at the foot of the bed.
Yeah.
And you did say, I'm sure you're going to divorce me, but can I have a Coke?
Yep. So, I have a lot of distortion still, and I cringe at some of the, everybody has cringe stuff. You think back on some part of your life, something you did or said or whatever, and you cringe. I mean, everybody has that. You probably have a couple of those yourself.
Oh my God. Yeah. as I get older, I get less cringy.
Yeah.
I just say like, well, it's a very familiar feeling, and yeah. I'm just like, it's of little consequence. Either people think you're an idiot or they don't. It's just the way of the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I still cringe at some of the things that I've done. And can kind of get stuck in these like mini spirals for, 10 seconds where I'm like reliving the quote unquote awful thing. I mean, I haven't done anything. I haven't killed anybody. Mm-hmm. I haven't run anybody with my car. Mm-hmm. I whatever sins I've committed, they're, if somebody else told me about them, I wouldn't think twice really. Mm-hmm. It's just like normal stuff on the one hand. And on the other hand,
what if in that moment you have that spiral and you just say, fuck you, mom and dad, for shaming me? That's not on me.
It's funny. Yeah. You say that, you ask that. Cause like, I wonder what to do with it. Like, I don't know what to do. I usually just,
I think anger is a very appropriate and healthy response and healing response. Cause that's the rash, your rights, there's been an injustice. And that's what's happening. It's an internalized voice that is committing more injustice. And the appropriate response is anger. When someone steps in your foot and acts like it doesn't matter,
yeah,
you get angry. When someone steals your cookies, you get angry. That other primates are like that. Other mammals are like that.
Right.
It's our natural response.
Huh. I'll have to think about it.
And it feels very good to get angry in situations like that.
It's funny. This happens to me when I go to sleep at night, probably 3 or 4 times a week, where my brain will flash on one of these things. Don't ask me what they are. I actually can't remember what, like I had one last night, but I can't remember what it was. And I usually just sort of groan. I go, And I wonder at some point, is she going to ask me what are you doing? What's up? What's going through your mind or whatever? And, she hasn't. I'm not sure. Maybe she thinks I'm just sort of achy because I have a lot of aches and pains lately. It's really hard to stand up when I've been on my knees. That's not a metaphor. It just is.
Yeah.
So I'm doing bathroom remodel, so I'm on my knees a lot. So yeah, maybe she thinks I'm just have aches and pains or whatever. So get angry. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll give it a shot.
Could you?
Yeah, I think I could get angry. I mean, I have been angry. So yeah, I think I could. And I wonder if it'll have any impact.
I get angry all the time. I'm angry frequently.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, it amounts to me spouting about something either on the podcast or to Stacey.
Okay, I get that. Yeah.
There are a lot of injustices to me and others.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm angry at your parents. I'm fucking livid.
Yeah.
They would treat you that way. It's idiotic. And
yeah, I understand that.
I don't know. Callous. That story of your mom just targeting you about whose birthday was it?
And yeah.
First, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Read the room.
Yeah.
This is a child. First, second grade. You know how small kids are?
Oh, yeah. I saw some kids last night at the grocery store, and they were just like little people. They must have been, like, the older one must have been 6 or 7 and just a tiny little thing.
Yeah, that's how old you were. Yeah. So imagine that person's parent just going after the kid because the kid is being shy about who's, what, you know, the girl's birthday, who, you know, what her name was.
Yeah.
It's not critical that you know the information as a parent.
No.
I understand that it feels a little rejecting as a parent, but grow the fuck up, you know? There's other things on the agenda today other than your own stupid ass ego.
Yeah.
And then your dad shames you.
Yeah.
I mean, when you first told the story, I was like, well, maybe he was just befuddled and didn't know what to do, and so he just walked away. But you're saying that he shamed you.
Yeah.
You know, he was disdainful. And that's just, it's like such ass backwards, because he saw it. It'd be one thing if he just said, oh, anyway, moving on. But he noticed, he's like, wow, something's different about my son, Bob, that I asked him to get cookies, and any other kid would have just grabbed. What did we do to him?
Yeah, no, he wouldn't think that way.
And or what could I do? You know, like at the minimum, you would just think that the dad would just be like, don't worry about the others, get whatever you want. That's the point. Go back, get what you want. You know, don't worry about your siblings. Something, and even that would have been inadequate, because at the very least, you know, you could do that. But what should happen is just like, holy shit, like what's gone wrong here? You know, what led up to this, and how do we correct for it? So yeah, if I were there, I don't know, I'd push him on his ass, honestly. I just like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. I had to learn how to not be a dick. Like, I absorb, you know, I'm not a parent because I don't want to do that to a child, and I would have. I'm 56 now. I probably, if I had a kid now, if they were little, I'd probably do okay. But you know, when it was, you know, time to, around the time that people typically have children, I know I would have messed them up with my own mood or whatever. And the thing I just can't get my head around is, how come there are some parents who are just decent humans? Like your folks, you know, not perfect. Okay, fine. Who cares? But like just genuinely decent. Because the people I grew up with, they're not.
Well, you've seen your brother be decent to his kids.
I don't know how he does it.
Yeah. It's intellectually, you get it, but
yeah,
I guess deep down it's hard to fathom.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of pressure. He's very similar to my dad in that there's a lot of pressure on him. He has four kids this day and age. At the same time, though, and, you know, he's a lawyer, and he works ungodly long hours. And the whole time they were growing up, he's coaching their sports. Like, he's involved in their lives and coaching their sports. And it's not like he has a whole lot of free time, but he's coaching, like, three sports at a time when they were little. Now his youngest is, she's 16 or so, and so he doesn't have to coach. He doesn't coach anymore. And he's glad about that, but he never begrudged it. And I think it was a way to have contact with them. You know, like, he taught himself how to play soccer, because we did not grow up in a soccer era in a soccer part of the world. So
yeah,
it's not like in field hockey, he was coaching his kids in field hockey. Like, who knows how to play field hockey? I don't. So he had to learn it. And he talks about them like he's fascinated by them and loves them and is enjoys them or whatever. But, you know, we grew up in an era where, you know, you send your kid out at 8 a.m. and they show up at dinner time and you haven't seen them, you know, the whole day and out of sight, out of mind, who, you know, whatever.
Well, that's different. I mean, true. And that doesn't necessarily correlate with being callous and abusive to your children.
Which is what I don't get. I don't understand how do people come up and be decent to their children? Because my only model is indecent.
Well, one, I don't think it's guaranteed you would have fucked up your kids any more than...
Well, it can't be known, but I know my temper.
And I do too-ish.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There would be some distortions and some reactivity. It wouldn't be nearly as bad as your parents, but I think it would have been, you know, 10%. There would have been some moments.
Mm.
But I don't know if it's for sure, because you were in charge of kids at times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm a pretty good uncle.
Yeah. So, I think there's a possibility that your positives would have, your overabundance of positives would have made up for the occasional negative.
Yeah. That's nice to know. Nice to consider.
Not that you should be regretting something.
But I don't understand how non-psych people can raise kids that are reasonably adjusted.
It's in the heart. We evolved to fall in love with our children and to feel the worst pain imaginable when they're in pain. And then we don't want them to be in pain, so we attend to them.
Well,
that wasn't... that was present with your parents because they're not psychopaths, but they had such relational trauma issues that it eclipsed it so often, you know? And then it creates this pattern where you become invisible, and even if there were opportunities for you to alert them as to what you wanted, then it wouldn't happen. It's not your fault, of course, but 7-8 years of being literally abused and physically and emotionally and verbally whenever you were visible as a person who has needs, it's going to shut that down real fast. And then, you know, like I said, it was in him, but it was their parents that fucked him up.
Yeah. But my folks are just working class, regular Philadelphia people. And I know that a lot of kids grow up in working class homes and aren't messed up.
No. Yeah. It has nothing to do with working class or Philadelphia. It has to do with your grandparents.
If I didn't get an education, I don't know what would have become of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Me either. It's interesting to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, my folks are both very well educated. But.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not education or class. It's within us to deeply care about kids, maybe not to exactly know what to do in any given moment, but left to our own devices without cultural negative aspects like homophobia, for example.
Yeah, right.
And without abuse yourself growing up, then maybe the easiest way is to say, you know, if you're raised well, then you have a model and you tend to do that. In the same way that for you, you're like, you have a hard time even fathoming parents who are attuned just on their own instinct.
Yeah.
You know,
I do have a very hard time with that.
Yeah. Like that just shows how much modeling gets under our skin. You know?
Yeah. Right.
Because for me, it's, I think it's very fathomable, and to me it's more the norm. You know, it feels more like the average parent. That's the sense I get.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have any education or any kind of instruction around this, but they love their kids and they had good enough modeling growing up. Maybe they're improving out the model a little bit because they know what not to do or something, and you know, they raise kids that are, for the most part, happy and secure and trust others and like themselves.
Well, it's weird to me. It feels like a miracle when that happens. And I imagine it's more the norm than my brain will permit it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well.
So, sorry, Jocelyn. I wish I had something better for you.
Yeah.
And I hope that my word on that isn't the last word. I'm just one person.
Is it possible that your shame makes it hard to recognize that you have improved?
Yeah, it's possible that's the case. Yeah, that's definitely possible that that's the case. But, you know, then I have a blind spot. I can't see what I can't see. So talk to me in 5 years. We'll see what I would say now. What would I say then?
Are you doing what you want to do right now?
With my life?
In this very second?
Oh, Jesus Christ, that question.
I'm asking you if in the cookie aisle right now you're choosing the cookies you want.
No. I don't know what I want to do, but I know this ain't it. Though, you know, I love you and I, you know, but I don't know. Are you?
Yeah. Am I doing what I want to do right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Fuck. That's amazing.
So you don't know what you want to do?
No.
But you know that this isn't it.
It's Monday at 10, so I know where I go.
Yeah.
I'm here. And I love you, and I like doing this in general, and, you know, but if you're asking me, is this what I want to do with my time right now? I have no idea.
Oh, you don't know?
Yeah. But I'd probably be at Home Depot researching thinset.
Okay.
And I'd probably be working in my bathroom.
Right.
Because I like that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I like doing that. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for the record, you know that you could be doing that right now.
You would never begrudge me.
No.
But I would probably never challenge. I would never speak up, which is not good for you.
What do you mean you would never speak up?
Like, if I didn't want to do this anymore, I don't think I'd say it to you. I'd probably just keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah. Which is not, that's not good for you.
Well, I it's not good for you. Yeah. That's for sure. I don't know how to interpret that, really. On one hand, it sounds like you're telling me that you don't want to be here right now, which is fine.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it sounds like you're saying you don't know if you don't know necessarily if you would want this or not. Because I could see a world, knowing you, that if you had, say, a full year of being able to assert your wants and needs, that you would be able to get a lot of needs met throughout the week, and you get needs met by being here with me and talking to the listeners.
And a felt sense that, right.
Because that's how I feel like my life is. You know, if you asked me, like, is there something I'd rather be doing right now? If I just thought of, like, of all the possible things that I could be doing, there's probably things that I'd rather be doing right now, I suppose. But those things I will have already done yesterday, or will do later today, or next week. You know, right now, for example, I have to stay on top of my shit so that the podcast doesn't fall apart.
Right.
I have to make sure that we're recording it. I have to make sure we're staying on schedule. Mm. I have to make sure you're comfortable. You know, there's things that I'm tasked with that they're fine, but it's not like a cookie, right?
Yeah.
More like an oatmeal cookie, if you know
what I mean. Oh, come on.
I guess, like, I want to see the new Scorsese movie, which I'm going to see with Umberto. Later this week.
Hey, right on.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And last night, for example, we had band practice, and that was a blast.
Wow, that's great. Did you have it here?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, right on.
So those are things that I guess if I could snap my fingers, I'd rather be doing.
Right.
But I got those things out of the way, or I will get those things. And
And
right now, this is absolutely what I want to be doing with my time right now.
Right.
So I'm guessing that if you had that experience, well, I guess we don't know, but
we don't know.
I think there's a chance that at least I'll tell myself there's a chance that if you had that kind of life, that you would actually have a similar point of view about what you're doing right now.
I'll tell you, what I want scares me. Like, the question scares me, because I think, what if I come up with something that's so, what if something that I want is so vastly off the radar that it completely fucks up my life?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I get frightened of the question, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know what I might say.
Mm-hmm.
And what if I said something that really hurt Colleen? What if I wanted something that really hurt you? What mm-hmm. if you know, like, I don't know. And I think, well, you know, maybe what people have to do is, well, people like me have to risk learning what they want and sort of damn the consequences and let what they want be, you know, a guide towards, you know, whatever their life, you know, however it unfolds, and not so much, you know, what's my obligation or what's the path of least resistance or what's the thing to do so that you don't upset people. That's harder. Actually, that's easy for me. That's kind of the norm. But I can't say that I know for certain that if I knew what I wanted to do, it wouldn't be this. Because mm-hmm. I love you, and I like hanging out with you, and I like doing this. And but that the question itself that you're asking is, you know, well, what would you be doing right now, Bob? That's frightening. I can't say that it's this, and I don't like to think about what it might be. So I find myself contracting from that question, even though I think for humans it's a really important, it's an important question. And, you know, as a therapist, that's one of the things that I pay attention to is, what do you want? I've never seen anybody want anything that was all that terrible. You know, most of us are not sociopaths who, mm-hmm. yeah.
To play it out with the typical fear that you have and others do of, well, what if when I discover what I want, I don't want to be in this marriage. I don't want to have this career. I don't want to have that group of friends. I don't want to do that activity that I do on the regular with those people. I'd be disappointing a lot of people. I'd be divorcing my wife. I would be quitting my job and starting over. I would be rejecting my friends and disappointing them. What if?
Yeah.
And that's the initial fear, the initial pain that would be caused. For sure. But all those people don't want you to be doing the things that you're doing with them unless you want to be doing them.
Yeah. Right.
They'd rather have you divorce them than to stay in a marriage that you have yet to know if you want to be in.
Yeah. I get that. It's just that the upheaval of that.
Like, which is that first kind of barrier of just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you're giving them a gift by divorcing them because it's better for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's not likely the scenario either. The people I've worked with on this question, there is that fear. And sometimes there's an abyss, you know. It's sort of like,
yeah.
I don't think I've ever thought about this. There's, I guess you could say me, where I know what I want and am okay with it for the most part and live in that flow of like from minute to minute, you know, what do I want to do right now? What do I want to do tomorrow? How does that fit in with other people's needs? And I want to meet other people's needs, you know? And then a step down from that is I have no idea what I want. The abyss. Who am I? What do I want? And then below that, actually, is I will just do what everyone else wants me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from the comfort of I will just do what everyone wants me to do to I have no fucking clue who I am or what I want,
mm-hmm.
it's a big black abyss of nothingness.
Yeah.
But that has to be experienced before you can step into what do I want. Because if you step away from I'm going to do this for everyone else, Butler syndrome, and you discard that for, well, what do I want? And at first, there's no answer to that. So the tendency is to run back to, well, I'll just do what everyone wants me to do.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so there's a very uncertain zone in the middle, the betwixt and between, if you remember.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And then there's the slow hero's journey out of the belly of the whale.
Right. Yeah. That about sums it up for me.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, I don't know how to process that because I asked the question not knowing what you would say, but I don't know how to process what you're saying. I have an impulse to stop recording and say, go to Home Depot, because it sounds like that's what you want to be doing right now.
Yeah, I get it. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Like I said, I would rather have you get what you want. And it wouldn't, you know, say you did. You went to Home Depot right now. Yeah, it wouldn't change anything for me. Like, my life isn't negatively impacted by that.
Well,
at all, really. It just means that the recording is a little shorter than it would have been normally, which doesn't mean really much to me at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The show goes on. You know, you're a fraction of the content that I make.
Yeah.
And also, I know that, I suspect we wouldn't not be friends if you were to assert what you wanted.
We'd be friends, yes.
So,
yes.
And even if you literally said, I don't know if I ever want to be on the podcast again, I know for sure that I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah. I believe you. And isn't it funny? You can have two parts. There's a part of me that absolutely believes you. And then there's the part of me that is like scared to challenge the status quo. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I also want to, I think, ask for the listeners right now that you only continue on this podcast today and forever because at least there's something you're getting out of it.
Well, there is. I mean, I get a few things. See, the question, I'm so literal. When you say to me, Bob, what do you really want to be doing right now? It might be Home Depot, even though this isn't like a burden. It's not like a big pain in the ass to come here and hang out with you and talk, you know. Yeah. It's not, but it's sort of like, that's part of why the question scares me. It's sort of like, well, shit, if I, you know, what kind of inconvenient douche would I be if I just didn't consider, you know, my commitments? And so I think of the question in a very narrow way, like, is this the absolute thing I'd really rather be doing right now? As opposed to, in general, do I like doing this? In general, yeah, very much. I like hanging out with you. I like the deepening in our friendship. And I like that whatever my contribution here is, it seems to be useful. I really like that. So, I mean, everybody has that day where it's like, yeah, I like my job, but do I really feel like doing it today? No, but I'm committed because, you know, that's what I do. And so it doesn't have to be the thing that I really want in order for it to be the thing that is meaningful or purposeful for me to do and to create a life trajectory that's in service of one's values, mm-hmm. my values.
Mm, I see.
So I might not choose this on this particular Monday, but I guess I wonder, you know, like, would you ever just like, because you woke up in the morning and you just felt like, you know, taking the dogs for a walk and hanging out with Stacy and learning how to make frittatas or something, would you ever wave off from our meeting, from me coming here and doing a thing?
Yeah, it is an interesting question. And, I'm thinking to the existentialists and the freedom versus responsibility aspect, I think is actually relevant to this. Because without freedom for you, Bob, then responsibilities are also tainted, right? There's neither responsibility or freedom. There's just meeting obligations and staying out of trouble.
Right. If you can't say no, how can you ever really say yes?
Right. Whereas for me, when I answer that question, and I will just refer to what I was saying earlier in terms of like, okay, here's what I like to do in life, and I'll get all those needs met throughout the week, then when I'm here, like I was saying, it's work. I have to stay on my, you know, if we were to turn off the recording, I would relax a little bit. I would maybe indulge my own topics a little bit. I would maybe pay a little less attention to every single word you're saying. You know,
come on, I'm giving you pearls.
Because, you know, there's a lot of prefrontal cortex involved in being a podcaster.
Sure.
And so if you asked me, you know, what would I rather be doing, I guess, is depending on how we answer that question.
Right.
But it is kind of interesting because when I think about that, I think about, well, yeah, I guess if I were to answer it like in one direction, in a narrow way, I think is the what you're saying is, I would rather like turn off the recording and just sit back and relax. But honestly, I don't think that's even the right answer because, you know, it's like working out or something,
right.
Or if you are parenting your kids, right? Would you rather your kids are, you're taking your kids to the zoo, and you have to corral your three kids and feed them and keep them in a happy mood, right. And get them to stop poking each other in the side. And, you know, there's a lot of things you have to do that you would rather not be doing. But so if you asked me in a situation like that, what would you rather be doing? I would say a bunch of things. I'd say I'd rather just be sitting on a bench, and like I'd rather be just at the zoo by myself because I don't want to have to constantly be other focused in the situation. But if you asked me, would you rather you just didn't go to the zoo with your kids? I'd be like, fuck no. Are you kidding me? I love going to the zoo with the kids, and and I love seeing them have a good time. And I, you know, it's all worth it. So it's kind of it depends on the way you look at it. Right. So the same way for me with this podcast, would I rather be kicking back and turning off a little bit of my prefrontal cortex? Yeah. But, would I actually rather be doing that? No, because if I just sat there and turned off half my prefrontal cortex my whole life, there would be no meaning in my life. There'd be no purpose. There would be nothing to entertain me, really.
Right.
So, it's but for you, because you don't have the overall freedom to do what you want and get your needs met, the question is approached from that place of just like, well, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why initially when you were saying what you were saying, I said, well, I suspect that if overall you had your needs met, you probably would say, yeah, I, although there are other things that I guess if I were to truly relax, I would be doing other than this. But in the big picture of my life, this is exactly what I want to be doing
right now.
But I don't know that. I don't want to assume that.
No.
I guess we can't assume that.
We can, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of anything I'd really rather be doing. You know, it's not like I wish I was going hang gliding or sitting on a beach somewhere. I don't really want those things right now.
I mean, I will say that your life is kind of a turning off of the prefrontal cortex, at least that metaphor. You've engineered your life such that that's a lot of your life. You have your clients like 23 a week or something.
Yeah, plus minus, yeah.
And it's at home, so you're over Zoom.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And then there's not a lot of paperwork, right?
No, very little.
And maybe collectively another half an hour of paperwork, an hour of paperwork a week.
Yeah, there's always something.
And your house is, you know, you're remodeling it, but it's your house. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
You can kind of putter with it over time.
Right. There's no clock on my bathroom remodel. Yeah.
You don't volunteer anywhere. You're not on a board of a nonprofit. You don't have any standing appointments, dinners with people or anything like that, right? You don't socialize all that much.
I do not.
And so your life is this, you know, nice cocoon of being at home.
Yeah.
Colleen's around all the time. Mm-hmm. She retired, but you see her occasionally when you're not retreating, you know, which is, you know, this is a tolerable amount of togetherness, I suppose. You do have date times with her, you know, where at the end of the day, you make dinner and sit on the porch or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your night ritual together in your cozy bed, which I will say is very cozy. Well, I'm looking at the time, Bob, and we're way past the first break, but the second break.
Did we finish Jocelyn's question?
I think so. And of course, this episode is going to be called Fast Questions for Bob.
Fast question.
Yeah. But I'm thinking we would just make this episode a patron-only episode. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So let's say our goodbyes to people, and then we'll re-record the beginning.
Right on.
Okay. So everyone, please take care of yourself in the way of allowing yourself to have your wants. Step into the yin and yang of freedom and responsibility instead of denying yourself the opportunity to have that question that might go unanswered for a while. You deserve to have that question strong in your mind, almost an instinct of, what do I want? What do I need? You don't always get what you want or what you need. You know, that Stone song. It doesn't really make any sense. You might not get what you want, but you'll get what you need.
I don't know what that song's about.
It doesn't. It used to be very profound to me when I was a kid, but when I
think about it, I'm like, because you might not get either. And yeah. sometimes you might not get what you need, but you'll get what you want. Yeah. Like, you don't need Cheetos, but you want Cheetos.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get what you want, but right. you don't actually get what you need. What you need is broccoli.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't really know.
Yeah. The profoundness of Keith Richards is beyond us.
Well, I guess the message is you don't always get the entirety of what you want.
Yeah.
But you will get at least some level of what you need. Is that, do you think that's what it means?
I don't know, because it's like we went down to the Jersey drugstore to get my prescription filled. I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy. The man looked pretty ill. We decided we'd have a soda, my favorite flavor, cherry red. And then he said one word to me, and that was blah, blah. I don't get it.
Hmm.
What the hell? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Like, why are they talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's look at it. I'm going to ask ChatGPT.
Oh.
What does the song...
You can't always get what you want?
You can't always get what you want mean. Let's see what AI tells us. Ambivalence and desire. Realism and acceptance. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Search for meaning.
Yeah.
Counterculture during the 60s. Social upheaval. Irony and humor. The song incorporates irony and humor, particularly in its reference to a drugstore and the line, I went down to the demonstration to get my fair share of abuse.
Of abuse, that's right.
So, yeah, I think it's just
that's a good
reminder
line.
That that life doesn't always fulfill our desires and that there's an inherent tension between what we want and what we can attain. Right. So that's what I always kind of...
Okay.
Because, you know, what we want, what we need,
yeah.
if you just look at it literally, it's maybe. Like... But more of just like... Hey, you know, there's a tension between what we want and what we can attain.
Maybe it's just sort of a muddy take on that theme. I can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you get what you need. It's just muddy.
What do you mean?
Like, not clear. Like, you can't always get what you want. Okay, we all get on that. But if you try, sometimes you get what you... If you try, sometimes you get what you need. This is not a universal fact, but we sing it because I don't know if it's the song or whatever. So it's sort of muddy. In that it may be about those themes, but it is sort of a muddy description of them, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the song?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah. Well, I hope y'all at least know what you need and what you want.
Yeah.
We don't always get it, but at the very least, you deserve to know it.
Yeah, it's good information, good data to inform life choice.
Yeah. And whether or not you come over to my house and podcast.
Apparently. Now you're going to be paranoid.
I'm not going to say it's not a little bit of a mild thorn in my side, but...
Sorry.
No. Yeah. I mean, I could have avoided by not asking. And I didn't know what you were going to say.
Yeah.
And like I think I said, it's not super...
God bless.
It doesn't pull the thorn out of my side, but I'll tell myself that if you did have a connection with which, I mean, that is the consequence. It's not like you don't know what you want in all other contexts, except for when you come over here and talk with me. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Right. It is consistent.
So yeah. It's like, it comes to the territory. So right. there's in order for you and I to have a friendship, I have to accept that at any given time you're with me, you don't necessarily know if you want to be with me.
I might not know.
Yeah.
But when I think we both are pretty clear that when we look back on the years of our hanging out together, that this has been a positive, like a really good thing.
Well, I can't.
Well, I know. It's easy for me to do that. I mean, you're my best friend, for fuck's sake. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I think I can pull the thorn out slightly by saying that. In all likelihood, if he did know what he wanted on a more regular basis, he would be doing this. Maybe, well, let me just ask. So if there was like a possibility that it would be different somehow, say it's, you know, you still come over and we still talk on the podcast. If it was slightly different, what would be something?
Occasionally we might do it over Zoom so I don't have to travel, but that's a pretty... I mean, you were literally 15 minutes away from me, so it's...
Is it even that far, 15?
It depends if I catch the red light. Sometimes it's less.
Yeah.
It's like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If I get the greens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching that today. I caught the first, there's six lights. I caught the first four. And then the one across Aurora, though, that was the, I got that one on the green. That's the long one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So, score, yeah.
You know. But I don't even care about that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I noticed you got the paved part where your trash cans are. That's all paved out now.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking when I pulled in, I'm like, oh, that parking space, that'd be about parking space for my car.
It's about, I thought about size. That,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
I thought, because we were thinking that if we made it a little bigger, it could have been another parking space.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't think we really need that. And I thought, you know, it'd be a pretty small car. And I was like, well, Bob would actually fit with his car.
Yeah. Hey, the terracing looks really good. And you got the flowers going in, huh?
Yeah, that's the neighbors.
Neighbors? Oh, really?
They're doing all that, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
They don't want their house to slide down the hill.
No, the neighbors next to me.
Next to you.
Are the ones that
they're
are doing.
Doing that. Yeah. Oh, well, it looks very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks a lot nicer than it before. Yeah.
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 Apparently, we're signing off here at some point, huh?
Everyone, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.